I would say my work is more of a question rather than an answer. I'm not giving myself answers, also because I'm not a scientist, I'm not an academic. So I'm not seeking for answers. I'm here to shake things, you know. So I'm here to question everything.
Was mit Kunst? Ein Podcast von und mit Johann König.
Today's guest is Agnes Questionmark. Agnes is an artist living in New York, born in Italy, who we just did an amazing exhibition with, including a performance, and how this all comes together, why Agnes and what the question mark stands for, Agnes is telling us now in the podcast. Today's guest is the artist Agnes Questionmark. Welcome, Agnes.
Hi, Johann. Thank you.
Agnes, I mainly driven by the question, how did my guests get in touch with art? So what was your first experience with contemporary art that made you become an artist?
Yeah, so I think I was 17 and I moved to London because as a queer young teenager, Rome was not the best place to be. So I traveled to London by myself. I started wandering around in the city, questioning who I was, what I wanted to do. And suddenly I decided to go to the Tate Modern, which was the first ever museum I went to. And in fact, the first show I saw was Agnes Martin, which in my mind, I thought it was a male artist. It mm-hmm. was Martin Agnes, which I had something confusing into my mind. And it was in front of a particular painting that I had a big transcendental experience. I really thought I was traveling somewhere else through that painting. And I was like, wow, this experience is crazy. I think I enter in communication with the artist. And I started to talk to the artist through this painting. You know, Agnes Martin paintings are very mystical, very calm and peaceful. And the whole room, I remember, there was a peace around and everyone was so quiet. So I really entered into this meditative realm, which was so strong into myself that I started to write into my diary. That was the first day I decided to write into a diary because I realized I was talking to someone else. At first, I thought I was talking to the artist, but then I realized I was talking to myself, or at least someone else inside myself. And I decided to give that voice a name, and I called it Agnes, because of the artist Agnes Martin. And voila, I started like this. I started to make projects about Agnes, about having an alter ego, reaching the impossible, reaching something intangible. And my work was very mystical at the beginning. The search of the other, the search of the unknown. That's mm-hmm, how I became mm-hmm. an artist.
But you identify as Agnes as an artist, but also you identify as Agnes in your life.
Yeah, that came on later on. Much later, when I was during COVID, when I was 25, it was 6-7 years after my first encounter with Agnes, that I realized, okay, maybe I can actually become Agnes even throughout my life. Mm-hmm. At that time, I was an artist, a full-on artist, so my whole life was about my work. And I really felt I needed a transformation in my personal life. And I question myself, what if I am actually Agnes? What if I can perform throughout my entire life this character I always played in my head and I always gave it an immaterial being? What if I can actually feel it within my body? And through a hormone therapy, I decided to change the morphology of my body from mm-hmm. male to female. And I started to take these medicines that gave me the strength to really become Agnes and be Agnes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it's interesting because it's an artist name, but also you found sort of the name which suits your identification. And question mark, your surname as an artist, what is about it?
So question mark, it's a funny story because for me, Agnes has always been a question. I was writing to her, I was sending letters to her since the very beginning. And of course, I was the recipient of the letters.
Yeah, to yourself, so to speak.
To myself, exactly. But I was always posing to her questions, because to me, she was always a question.
Mm-hmm.
And I would ask her, Agnes, very banally, where are you? Where can I find you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where does our encounter happen? So when suddenly I became Agnes, I needed to put a surname. And I remember Duchamp having an alter ego, a female alter ego, De La Vie. So I was like, okay, I might give it a French surname. So for a few days, I was Agnes Demand. But then Demand didn't really feel right.
Because demand means question mark in French? No.
Yeah, like a demand, like a question.
Oh, okay.
I demand this.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I don't have any French relation myself, so I might put it as a symbol. I might put the question mark as a symbol.
Mm-hmm.
So for a year, I was Agnes with the actual question
mark.
Like
a hook, the hook.
Yeah,
question mark hook, yeah.
The symbol, which to me speaks a lot in relation to my practice, because the question mark is something that you cannot really pronounce. Is something that you need to perform, actually. You need to perform the question for the other to understand that you're posing that question.
Mm-hmm.
Something in your facial expression, something in the intonation.
True, yeah.
So, and also it's something that we as humans, in a bureaucratic sense, we don't really accept the symbol. You can't have a question mark or any other symbol as your name. So I was like, okay, I like this. It really embraces my identity.
Is it also carrying doubt? Like Agnes?
Yeah, like, people at the beginning some people were like calling me Agnes,
mm-hmm.
put it at intonation.
Mm-hmm. Was it skepticism?
From my side?
No, just wondering if, you know, it's like a question mark is more carrying a question or hesitation, doubt, explanation mark doesn't really accept much.
Yeah.
Counter questions, I would say, maybe.
Yeah, totally. I think I seek comfort in the question. Because I constantly question myself. My life is a life of transformation. I really seek comfort in the question because I don't need to find an answer.
Mm-hmm.
I rather posing questions than finding answers.
Yeah, that's what art does too, no?
Yeah, exactly. And my work, my work is more of a question rather than an answer. I'm not giving myself answers, also because I'm not a scientist. I'm not an academic. So I'm not seeking for answers. I'm here to shake things, you know. So I'm here to question everything. And I always like to question myself, question the world around me. So that's why the question mark was really important to me. And then because of the symbol wasn't easy to be a human being in society with a question mark as a surname, because I was really asserting my identity mm-hmm. as Agnes question mark. So I had to write it and spell it.
And then you choose the English.
I chose the English
question
English
mark
version. Mm-hmm. Write it down question mark. And people, especially in the US, they really believe question mark is my surname, and it's very funny because they all love this surname. I don't think anyone else has this surname.
Yeah, interesting. In German, we have, you know, interesting names sometimes, like Geldzähler or Fragezeichen. Probably is not existing. So and then, how did you develop your own language in your work? So we just exhibited your sculptures and works on canvas, but all this derives from performances, no?
Yeah. So as I said to you before, my work since the beginning was about myself and my body and my transformation. So I needed to put my body as the protagonist, as the main character of my work. So it was very organic, very intuitive for me to use my body as my work, because I was trying to understand myself. Mm-hmm, I was like, okay, mm-hmm. I have this body, I have this identity. What do I do? And especially, what can I do with my body? This is the main question I ask myself. I don't like category. I don't stick to anything fixed. I'm always in the move. I'm mm-hmm. always transforming and reshaping myself. And performance is that media that allows myself to really embody these sort of incongruences that I feel as a human being. And it's a medium that allows many layers to play at the same time. So I started doing performance since the very beginning. And I developed this language according to my own life as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think my life and my work goes together, one inform the other. because I grew up in the sea. My father has always been a sailor. For example, I learned first the name of all the fish, then all the, I don't know, literature, Italian characters. So for me, the underwater world, the non-human world, has always been very close to me in a very natural way. So I started to perform underwater because I felt simply as a fish. I always felt I was a fish. It was very normal to be a part of the underwater world. And on the other side, I have my mom being a pharmacist, a chemistry. All my family, they're all doctors. They all work in science or in the health system. And funny enough, since I was a kid, I was taking medicines because I was not growing. I had to take hormonal growth medicines. So I was always with doctors, appointments. I was always surveilling. There was always someone surveilling my body, surveilling myself. So I had to establish this relationship with the doctor.
And sort of a dysfunctional body or suggested to be dysfunctional.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's not fitting the norm, right?
Yeah, I wasn't fitting the category. I was not producing enough testosterone. I was not what society expects you to be. And you know, family are institutions. Family are a mirror of society. So they were worried about me. So
yeah, because there's a certain standard, right?
Yeah, especially at the time as a young boy, they expected me to behave and also for my body to function in a certain way. We use we consider our body as a efficiency machine, as a product machine. So I started to have this transformative approach since the very beginning. So I'm not surprised that I started to transform myself later on into aliens, into octopus, into mermaids, and develop this sort of mythological world within my work.
One spectacular performance you did, it's like a huge octopus.
Yeah.
Where you wear like an octopus dress. Maybe you take us a little bit through audio explanation into that one.
Yeah, sure. That happened right at the beginning of my transition, gender transition. I was feeling that my body needed a transformation. So I decided to perform for 23 days in an abandoned swimming pool as a huge octopus. Octopi for me in that moment was a strong symbol of motherhood. The octopus dedicates its own body to the offspring, and sometimes it dies and the offspring feeds from its body. So there was this sort of martyr figure within my work that it was very important to me because I needed to kill part of myself to allow a new being to become. So for me was important the fact of imposing myself for 23 days to feel that struggle, to feel that decaying.
Like a catharsis. Like,
Yeah, exactly.
But I think also interesting is the octopus is an animal which is still sort of unclear to science how it fully functions, no?
Yeah, it's like an alien version of the human being.
Yeah.
It is so far away from our evolutionary pathway, but still it holds so many great characteristics. And what is interesting to me about the octopus, and I was also reading Donna Haraway, The Cthulhu Scene, which was an important book for that moment, is that the octopus nervous system is not vertical, but is horizontal. So there is no hierarchy in how an octopus thinks and feels. So I wanted to break that hegemonic structure of the human being to really say, okay, we as humans, we need to break our Anthropocene, our hegemonic function with the non-human world. So I want to perform as an octopus to really embrace that feeling of being able to become something else, being able to decentralize our nervous systems as well, you know, stepping back from our pyramid and say, okay, we can be animals, we can be octopus and embrace this sort of non-humanness. And this led me to the study of philosophies such as posthumanism, transhumanism. That was very rewarding because what I was feeling within my body, what I was feeling within my thoughts in my diary, there were actually many other writers and philosophers and contemporary thinkers that they were analyzing and studying an existential problem of being human nowadays in contemporary society. So, yeah, this is my question. What does it mean to be human now.
Today, yeah. And did you went to art school? How did you identify art as a possibility of expression and language? You mentioned the experience with the Agnes Martin show, but...
Well, yeah, it was such a great experience for me, that particular show of Agnes Martin, that I went to the bookshop of Tate Modern and I bought a book called Experimental Photography. And it was a DIY book on how to create cameras by yourself. So I was creating cameras from a matchbox. And there was another task that was like, how to turn your room into a dark room. So I actually lived for a week inside a tiny little room that I had in London, and it was all taped. It was completely black, completely dark, and I was developing films by myself and developing pictures by myself. And then I decided, okay, I might do this as a life job. You know, I want to keep knowing, I want to keep researching about this. So I decided to go to Camberwell College of Art and do a photography course. Mm-hmm. I thought photography was my main medium at the beginning.
Yeah.
I think I still keep that that feeling towards photography. Like for me, my work is very much about image making. Mm-hmm. I'm creating a new image of the human being, for instance, you mm-hmm. know? Mm-hmm. And if you see my work, like sometimes the image is even stronger than the performance itself. Mm-hmm. And theory for photography for me is very important. The theory of photography, the philosophy of photography, Walter Benjamin, Susan Sontag, Roland Barthes, they're very much present in my work because it's about reality. You know, photography is about reality and how do we encounter reality.
Yeah, although the problem of photography often is the aura, right? I mean, your work creates extreme aura. So, and how did your parents react to this sort of unusual path on multiple levels?
I think my parents, at some point, they lost me.
Yeah.
They were like, okay. At the beginning, they were trying to understand. They were like, okay, we want to follow you. We want to know what you're doing. But at some point, they just lost me and they just leave me do whatever I want.
But they support you?
They do. Yeah, they're very supportive. Yeah, my father really understands me because he traveled the world. So he has that open, free mind.
Yeah.
And they're very proud of all the things I do. You know, they try to follow me wherever I go. And
because often I spoke to many artists, then they were studying art, but they told their parents they're actually becoming art teachers, which was sort of a white lie because they couldn't tell their parents that they go to like free arts academy because they thought they won't cope with this idea, you know. So interesting, because I guess Italy is probably as conservative as Germany.
Oh, you think so?
Oh, you think more?
I don't know.
But you still live in London now?
No, I live in New York.
In New York, okay.
Yes,
so
yes.
You left Italy quite early.
Yeah, very early.
But you identify as an Italian artist?
Oof, that's a tough question. I don't know. I think I'm glad of being Italian. I don't reject my Italianness. I think there is something very Italian about my work. But since I traveled so much, I really feel I'm trying to understand the world as a whole, rather, even if it's impossible to understand it as a whole. But I'm trying to, I don't know, maybe remove my roots. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Because you have your studio in New York, but you also have a real fabrication studio
in Rome.
In Rome,
yeah.
Where you produce these, how to describe, they're like sculptures of creatures which are on metal rods standing. Yeah, sort of alien animals between, I don't know, how would you describe them?
So, yeah, they are...
Instruments almost, right? They're almost like gynecological instruments, some of them.
Yeah, well, the show is inspired by practices of obstetrician and gynecologist. And it's about a new birth, a rebirth, perhaps. I draw out this creature, this sort of alien, half human, half, I don't know what, a hybrid
instrument,
creature.
Instrument, yeah, mm-hmm.
That I perform, and then the sculptures are the offsprings of this creature that I am becoming. So you see this transformation throughout my life, gender transition, human transformation, but then in my work you see this evolution changing, not the history of human changing, the evolution of the human body changing, and all these creatures become monsters that they're learning to walk, they're learning to really exist in the world. And my question is there a world for this creature? Is there a world for this alien? As the same questions I pose myself, is there a world for me as a human being? And then you have a series of instruments, surgical instruments, that I took inspiration from obstetrician and gynecologist, but then I reshaped them with my own imagination, with my own mythological world. Now I'm creating a new narrative, let's say I'm creating a new narrative, in which the patient, which is the alien, takes ownership of its own body. To me, it's very important that these creatures, there is a sort of joy about these creatures, instead of the control of the human being into them.
Yeah, because they appear quite friendly, no? Because
yeah,
you call them
colorful.
Monster, but they're very positive colors.
Yeah. I think it's a very joyful show. Also, the instruments, sometimes instruments of doctors are very cold.
Yeah.
They're gray, cold, metal.
Yeah, stainless steel.
Yeah, but those are like very
colorful,
playful,
rainbow,
childish.
Almost
yes.
Rainbow colors. But I think also when you look at them, it's not so easy to understand if they live underwater or mammals. Yeah.
Mammals, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I started under the water, but now maybe because of my transition, I came out of the water and I'm seeking for new spaces. I want my work to be undefinable. I want people to see, to look at my work and not really know where does it belong to. If it belongs underwater, if it belongs to the earth, if it belongs to the sky, to the universe. I think I'm creating a new world. It's about world building.
The creature will sort of develop and transition, but it stays in its... You found your material and you're going to continue in that line of sculpture.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm going to change always.
Yeah.
It's my nature to change and to transform.
Yeah.
Resin is a very important material for me. I think I found a material that allows a sort of fluidity. It looks like glass, but it's not really glass. It's shiny, slimy. It looks wet. The creatures look wet.
Yeah.
And I need that materiality, I need that appearance, that aesthetic, for the viewer to think that they just came out of the water or they just came out of the womb.
Yeah.
And then the costume is made out of silicone. That is a very important material for prosthetics, especially movies.
Yeah.
To give that flesh look.
Sense.
Mm-hmm. Sense. Mm-hmm. And during my performances, especially these last ones, the operations, people, even though they know it's fake, you know it's fake, you know it's a costume, but yet there is that sort of uncanny experience, uncanny feeling, a bit gross when the doctor performs surgeries in my body, because I can feel the reaction of the viewer. They're very vocal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they do like, ooh, ah, like as if you're looking at a real operation.
Yeah. So how long is the performance?
So I'm shifting. I started doing long durational performances of like long, all day, 20 days, because I needed that time frame.
But so it's physically very intense for you?
It's physically very intense.
Yeah.
It has been very intense for me.
And it's always a process of birth somehow.
It's a rebirth.
Rebirth.
It's like constantly killing yourself and allowing a new part of yourself to be born.
Mm-hmm.
Even now, I feel like after every performance, I change.
Yeah.
In my life as well.
Yeah.
I'm like this. I feel like I'm like an octopus, always transforming, camouflaging, and never stick to one category. I think that's very important.
And tell me about the work on canvas, because there's one image of almost like an open heart.
Yeah. So if you come to my studio in New York, you would see it looks like being in a laboratory space. Everyone says that it feels like people are inside a mad scientist laboratory.
Yeah.
I have a lot of images on the wall that I collect and I use as a sort of database, sort of data collection that I found online. And then I print them and I stick them all over my studio. I need the walls to be completely filled. I have this sort of horror vacui anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Because I need the images to talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I need to be in a space that I feel inspired. And suddenly one day I was looking at them and I was like, okay, what if this could be part of the work? I never saw my research as part of the work. And I started to Photoshop and do these collages on my computer with those same images that I print and create new images. So it's a sort of repurposing of the archive, manipulating my own database to create new images. And I print them on cotton and on canvas, so it allows me to act upon them once more, to manipulate them even more. So I paint on top of the actual printed canvas to create a new images. And some other paintings instead are coming from my drawings.
Mm-hmm.
I like to draw small scale, like in a sketchbook. And I do these very childish drawings of aliens it's what is happening in my head. You know, I see these weird creatures, and perhaps this is how I see myself.
Mm-hmm.
I have this alter ego, which is this weird creature, hybrid creature. But since they're very small, then I need to enlarge them. So I manipulate, again, the image on my computer, and I print it so I can see it big scale and paint on top again. So it's a funny process because there is a lot of machine involved. And I like that at some point I lose the process. As we were saying, you just mentioned before the aura of the picture, you know, and Walter Benjamin says that through photography,
yeah,
we have lost that aura because of what? Because of repetition.
Yeah, reproduction, yeah.
Reproduction.
Mm. Which also in this conversation is interesting to think of reproduction, you know,
as an actual human, animal reproduction.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And the intervention of the machine, to me, is important because I lose control. And unexpected things happen. Like, I don't have good skills.
Mm-hmm. You mean handy?
In technological skills. So sometimes I let Photoshop, I just play randomly with Photoshop.
And AI as well?
AI, mm-hmm, a lot, yes, mm-hmm, yes. But I don't really understand it. But I like that. I don't think I need to know exactly what am I doing. So I let the machine do and give me an image that I don't expect, and then I'm like, okay, maybe I like, mm-hmm, what is, mm-hmm, happening, mm-hmm, here, so I'm gonna keep.
But it's usually quite medical or existential. A heart, flesh, organs, right?
It's like, yeah, it's about those particular that heart. It's I was looking at heart operations, and there is this machine that is called the Trans. It's a company called Transmedic, and it's a medical company that is allowing the heart to live outside the body for, mm-hmm, 48 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And to me,
For transplantation. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They say that organ transplant is one of the least developed activity in the medical system. They still don't have a lot of knowledge, and they don't have the instruments to sustain that, especially for a heart. It's so hard to make it live outside the body for more than 8-10 hours. So to travel, if you are in another part of the world, perhaps you can't have a new heart transplant because they can't keep it alive outside the body. Mm-hmm. But with this machine, what is new about it is that it can live for actually 48 hours. So it could go everywhere around the world. And if you see the machine online, if you see a video of that, it's really uncanny. It's really weird as an experience to see a machine pumping a heart. To me, it's the ultimate goal, you know,
Artificial life.
For, mm-hmm, this hybridization, mm-hmm, this fusing the human body with the machine and vice versa. We already, if we don't have an heart transplant, we are already cyborgs,
yeah,
for many different reasons. I'm a cyborg because I need the medicines to allow my identity to be what I want to be.
And you have to continuously use it, right?
Yeah.
You can't stop.
No, I can stop. What's nice,
but then your
about
body
it,
changes again.
Yes. And I think a lot of trans people really, at some point, maybe after 2-3 years, they understand that they can play with the transition. And depending on how much medicine you take, your body responds accordingly. So at some point, it becomes almost like a game. You play with masculinity and with femininity. So now, for example, I perceive myself way more masculine than last year.
Mm.
So it's about...
But you didn't change anything.
No, I didn't change. I mean, I had a breast remove. I had implants before, and then I decided to remove them. Because I feel like I got trapped in a binary system, even in my transition.
Because of the conformistic way a woman looks like this, so you have
I thought I had to fit into a standard. Yeah. And when I realized that, I was like, I'm betraying myself.
Because you identify as a woman, so the society expects you to have...
To have breasts. In Italy, for example, until a few years ago, you had to have a breast implant to...
Yeah. Or to have, really...
To have a change in passport. Had to have your genitals...
Mm-hmm. Because that's how the binary system...
Yes, because most of the judges, they're men, mm-hmm. they're straight men, and they don't... We don't have queer people in law. We don't have queer people, mm-hmm. too many queer people in politics. So they don't really understand. So they have that binary understanding of a human body. So,
but it's interesting, these because what you said before about trends, you know, I have a cornea transplant, mm-hmm. and I'm waiting for mm-hmm. a new one. Mm-hmm. And I also have to take medicine my whole life. Because even now the cornea doesn't work anymore, I'm waiting for a new one, which means someone needs to pass away to be a donor of a heart cornea transplant. Patients who have who receive transplantation, they need to permanently use these immune suppressive medicine. Mm. And it's interesting, these, like, in this conversation, mm-hmm. reproduction, you know, reproduction of photography, but then these concept of reproduction, which, like, the conservatives say, but that makes a difference between man and woman. You pick up in your performances, but then also this trends. I mean, it's like heart transplantation. It's not an eye, but a cornea. So it's interesting how we have these parallelities in words somehow pop up in this conversation.
Yeah. I think you got exactly my work. You know. First of all, I saw the cornea transplantation operation, and it's pretty awesome. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and thousands of years old already, you know. They used to do this. Because it's very simple. They used to do this with blonde female hair, like ages ago, because it's the thinnest hair. Because it's quite simple. You just cut out the front of the eye, and then you replace it, and you just sew in another part, and... only if you're sort of a risk patient, you need to take this immune suppressives, because the body reaction to not reject cornea.
So what they were using the hair for? To do the stitching?
To do the stitching, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Because that was the thinnest possible sewing material.
Yeah.
Back then.
That's crazy. That's crazy. Yeah, I think this idea of rejection, of allowing another organ of another human being, or even of another animal, is so important in the understanding of who we are as human beings. We think we are this skin box that we have. We can't change. We can't expand forward. But actually, we are not. You know, what does it mean that you're gonna have the eyes of someone else? What does it mean that a human being has a pig's heart? Because that's what they're doing now. They're trying to do, and some were successful, heart transplant from pigs, because it's a closer animal to us, it's a closer organ to us, so the human body could accept that organ. But the main issue is acceptance. It's accepting that organ, because the body might reject it, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. So yeah, but even like for me, when I put implants into my body, it was painful, because the body kind of understands that there is an external object implanted inside, so it creates a capsule, mm-hmm. a sort of sac around to protect it and to accept it, and that's why the implants don't move anymore, because the body has understood that there is something inside that needs to protect.
Mm-hmm. And grows around it. Yeah.
And on the reproduction, I think when I say you got my work, is because I'm trying to, even with my research, with the writing and the reading I do, I'm trying to prove, to make people understand that the idea of humanity has expired, in the sense that it doesn't make sense anymore to consider ourselves human as this normative being. you know?
Yeah.
And I'm proving that through reproduction and through artificialization, especially with the medical system, because we are so much embedded in all the artificial, synthetic medical world, then we don't have anymore, we don't hold anymore that natural, sort of pure aura of the human being. That's why Walter Benjamin for me was seminal in this sense,
mm-hmm.
because I see the aura of the human being lost through this reproductive mechanical process that you just mentioned before.
Mm-hmm. But interesting is, I mean, that's like 100 years ago. Why do you think there's so much resistance and conservative holding on to the sort of normative standards we...
Normativity is everywhere. It's in politics, in social squares, in science, in art. Even in Italy, for example, the new government is endorsing normative reproduction, is removing gay couples the right to have their child. They are proclaiming artificial reproduction as a universal crime. You know, it's a very tough and violent action for queer people.
I just wonder, why do you think, is it because of fear? Is it because of holding on to how things always have been and not allowing to evolution change? Or where do you think is a from a human point of understanding, why do you think there's this aggression and resistance in accepting change?
So first of all, people are scared of change. So I would say it's fear. People fear change because they seek comfort in what they can understand. And on the other hand, there is an obsession of needing to understand, needing to categorize, needing to translate. And when you are untranslatable, when they can't grasp you and understand you, then people freak out. People don't understand. Even for me, for my gender transition, people want to know. So are you a man? Are you a woman? What are you? Mm-hmm. How do we want you to be called?
Like the question mark.
Like the question mark. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't call myself, you know. I reject definition. I reject categories, as I said. And I think it's very brave to transform yourself.
Yeah, which is interesting because in other parts, there's a welcoming side to transition and progression as well, but to other parts, not at all. Yeah, but it's great that you sort of take the initiative to take part in this through your work, and that's important and I think also meaningful. So what comes next? What are you working on right now?
I am working on multiple projects. I think now I really need to target my aim as an artist. What is my message? And I want to put the different aspects of my work all together. So we have the human body, you have the machine, and you have the non-human, so the animal, so to speak. So I want to put these three categories together to create something new. So I'm working on a sort of hybrid body, half human, half unhuman, that becomes the machine itself and it is operating in its own body. So because we are all born patients, I'm actually reading this book about the unborn patient. The fetus is the first patient even before being born. I want to separate the patient from its doctor and for the patient to become its own doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So you have this...
united, so to speak.
Yes. So it's an independent, autonomous being.
Self-sustaining.
Self-sustaining.
Self-surgery.
That keeps... Self-surgery. Yes, exactly. Self-surgery that can keep transforming and keep changing its own rules.
And what about transcendence or religion or higher power?
An Italian critic came to my studio recently and he told me that my work for him is very religious, mm-hmm. because there is this sort of martyr experience, this sort of suffering. I need to suffer, I need to kill part of my body. Mm-hmm. This is a very religious
experience.
Mm-hmm. We're in Saint Agnes. Agnes comes from the Agnus Dei, is the sacrifice.
Yeah.
Okay, so in my performance, I sacrifice myself, I sacrifice my body. for it to allow it something else, you know, a new transformation. But I want to react to it because I don't want to give a negative experience of my work. I want people to act and think positively when they look at my work. It's important to embrace this religious, transcendent experience, but also I want to give it a sort of twist. You know, yes, to sacrifice yourself, you have to do it, but it's also a joyful experience. You know, transformation comes with pain, that is for sure. But that transformation can also be joyful.
Oh, and in the recent days, the artist list of the next Venice Biennale has been released, and you are one of some, which is an amazing step in your every artist's career, and especially interesting, even though you don't really identify as Italian or deal with the
complex relationship,
but you're Italian, and that makes it even more special to be included because there are very few Italian artists in the Venice Biennale. So can you tell us a little bit about the topic of the show and also what we can expect from you?
Yeah, so the whole Biennale of this year is going to be, it's called Migrants Everywhere, Migranti Ovunque, which is inspired by the famous piece by Claire Fontaine, These Neon Lights. And it's a very important topic to really tackle right now, especially in Italy, in Europe in general. And I'm actually in it also because I'm Italian. They were interested about my work as an Italian young artist. This year, there's going to be a lot of queer, a lot of transgender artists. It's all about nomadism. It's all about nomadic subjects, diaspora, anti-colonial theories, and queerness. Because I'm trans, I am a nomad in my own body. Nomadism, I understand it not in its traveling, not as a journey, as a voyage. That's like tourist voyage. To be a nomad, like Rosie Bredotti says in her book, Nomadic Subject, is about embracing that nomadism within yourself and allowing all these different aspects of your life to really tune in together.
So, like an evolution.
Exactly. Evolution into this new species, post-human, post-Anthropocene, post-Toulousine, in which we become this ungraspable being that yet includes the different nuances that we possess, rather than have a singular, vertical, hegemonic view of what and who we are. That's why Migrants Everywhere is such an important topic for this year, because we are all migrants, and we have to accept our being migrant also within our body. My body migrates always, you know, transform. I transform myself constantly, so I am a stranger to my body, you know. And I'm proposing this installation. It's a medical installation. It's a surgical bed, a metal surgical bed, which has a hybrid creature on top. And the creature becomes the surgical bed and is doing an intervention in its own body. And there are 3 to 4 screens that shows what is happening inside the body of the creature. So for the first time, I'm asking myself, rather than transforming the creature in its morphology, what if I transform the creature within inside? What we were talking before, like organ transplant, cornea transplant, what is happening inside this creature? You know, I think a lot about its forms, its physical forms. But now for the first time, I want to think about its internal structure and what is the sound that is happening inside the body? What is the heartbeat of this creature? Mm-hmm. Those things I never thought about, and I think now I really want to do it. Mm-hmm, and for the first time, I'll do it for the Venice Biennale.
So it's a continuation also of your sculptural practice now?
Yeah, it's an expansion, I would say, of my sculpture. Yeah.
Okay, wow. But also, again, incorporating video performance.
Yeah, it's a video sculpture mechanical installation. It's going to be very hard to make, also to present to people, because it's going to be a very edgy, I would say, very different work. But I'm excited.
Great, congratulations.
Thank you, Johan.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Looking forward to continue.
Likewise.
Was mit Kunst? Ein Podcast von und mit Johann König.